Shut up and sit down.
הסטארט-אפיסטיות. פודקאסט על יזמות שחולמות ומגשימות.
Hi and welcome to another episode of הסטארט-אפיסטיות featuring female founders who dream and deliver. My guest today studied business administration and international business at Wrocław University of Economics. She founded Poland Enterprising Woman, a business club empowering young female graduates, was a product and business owner at Rocket Internet, and 4 years ago she started her own startup. Hi, Evelina Robacek from Vouchery. Did I get your name right?
Yeah, you were very close. So it's Evelina Robacek. Which actually means a small bag in Polish.
Wow, very cool. We're both members of the same Facebook group where I posted a call to women entrepreneurs with a tech startup who'd like to be interviewed to fill a form. You did it, and here we are. Your last name is Polish, and you are living in Germany, Berlin.
Yes. So 9 years ago, I was still working and studying in Poland. But I came to Berlin just for a weekend, and I loved the vibe of the city so much that together with my friend, we just decided to move. And since then, I've been living and working as well in Berlin, although my company is set up in London.
You were one of the founders of Enterprising Women in Poland. What did you feel was lacking, and how did you manage to close that gap?
Before going to study to the university, I went to have a six-month gap to Holland, nearby Amsterdam. And there, I was just 18 years old. I started working at a company that was packing vegetables, so like a small salad. There was also a few other teenagers with me. And after a week of working, we all received our salaries. And what I noticed is that everyone else got 50 euro more. Everyone got like 250 euro and I got only 200 euro. I simply thought it must be a simple mistake, right? So I went to the boss and asked, I received the 50 euro less salary than the other people. I think there was a mistake. And the boss looked at me and said, the other people are guys. So do you think you can earn as much as men do?
I'm shocked. Did he actually say that?
Yeah. And I was 18 years old. I was very surprised. And I said, hey, but we just did the same job. They were also packing salads. And I was also like putting boxes. I was really trying. And I didn't even notice that I was the only woman there. Next day, I changed job for another, which paid the normal wages for both men and women. After I came back, I started learning more about the differences between men and women. This is why I decided to start the project in my university that encouraged young female graduates to learn how to survive the aggressive, the business world of men, but also how to succeed. So we were inviting many successful businesswomen, business owners that gave us a lot of learnings, shared their knowledge, how to negotiate and how to really act as a woman when you're often challenged by unconventional situations.
I'd love for you to share some of those lessons learned through Enterprising Women, which you remember till this day.
There was many. Maybe just say one, do not treat yourself as a woman in business. Treat yourself as everybody else. So work as everybody else, expect as everybody else. Don't be woman in business. Be the businessman that everyone else is. So that definitely helped me also to look at myself and treat myself at the equal level without jeopardizing my career.
When you shared the story about the Netherlands, I must admit I was quite surprised that that happened there. I was, for some reason, under the impression that they have a good understanding about gender gap and acting differently. But I guess not.
You know, probably the fact that I was young, inexperienced, an immigrant coming from Poland to Holland, maybe that mattered as well. from my perspective back then, that should not have made any difference.
True back then and true today. So I'd like to go back to your 4 years at Rocket. What was it like?
So I started as an intern in online marketing, and then I switched to CRM, which was more dealing with data influence on marketing campaigns. And from there, I became a product and business owner of one of the in-house tools for personalizing marketing campaigns. So basically, together with a colleague, we created a highly automated tool that aggregated data about single customer and used those data to create highly personalized, innovative marketing campaigns across the channels.
Is that also what gave you the idea for Vouchery, the startup you're working on today?
Yes, exactly. So I learned a lot while working on this project. I was also very young back then. I was maybe 20, 24, 25. Ran a team of 6 people, including engineers and data scientists. And despite we had access to around 100 ventures of Rocket Internet portfolio, there was a lot of issues with the vouchers and the coupons. So there was a lot of fraud happening, a lot of third party using coupons to profit for their own, especially in developing markets like Southeast Asia, Africa, and South America. During that time, I really noticed how inefficient the promotions are, how much money the company loses spending unnecessarily on those promotions.
I found a letter you wrote to yourself back in 2015 when you decided to leave your job and start an MBA.
Oh, yes.
And then a few years back when you moved from your apartment, you found it again and you found it at the right time. Just when you left Rocket and decided to start your own company, Vouchery, you wrote, "From Evelina to yourself, congrats on leaving your job. You've made it. It wasn't an easy decision to make, but you're fully aware it was a necessary step that will allow you to focus, reach your next goal, an MBA, and grow towards your real potential. Real success is ahead of you. Best wishes, Evelina." Love it. It does take courage to leave whatever you're doing, jumping into a new adventure, doing new things. And that leads me to the question, what made you leave Rocket and start your own business?
Yes, I made a lot of risky decisions, including moving to Berlin in the middle of my studies, actually. I like when I'm afraid and you're not really sure whether you should actually go through with the decision or not. Sometimes you just think, let's do it. Let's just push forward with a peak of energy that you have. When you believe it's going to be an amazing decision, I always write some notes to myself, either congratulating myself on doing this or just simply reminding myself how much the decision has taught me. It's very important for me. And also I believe that believing in yourself and believing in the success of your decisions has definitely a very positive impact on your life. Coming back to your question, interesting thing is that when I started at Rocket, I was very passionate about starting new ventures. I really loved the idea that Rocket Internet was going to the markets where no one else would, including Amazon, for instance. So Rocket was starting ventures in countries like Sri Lanka, Nepal, Ivory Coast, so really secluded part of the world. I was passionate about bringing services to people that were not used to that. So my dream was to be the first person in the company that really starts a new business. When I reached that point, I was actually working on a new project in Southeast Asia, new hotel business model in Indonesia. I realized that oftentimes doing that for Rocket did not really mean innovating on business models. Many times it was a job that just copied business models who were previously developed to a new market.
Oh, yeah. Rocket is that company run by those three German brothers, right?
Yes, exactly. Those are the Zamber brothers.
Mm-hmm. They made millions just duplicating companies and localizing them in different geographies.
Mm-hmm.
I remember looking at them back in 2014 when they just duplicated Airbnb and localized it for Germany. And they did the same, if I'm not mistaken, for Uber and other great companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you probably followed as well during the time when I was there, because that was the biggest years of Rocket when it actually went public on German stock exchange. For me, it's been great time in this company. Definitely, I learned a lot.
And then you reached the point that you said, okay, I had enough copying, pasting the same companies and I want to make one of my own.
I thought I was not ready to start my own business and I should go back to study internationally to improve my business acumen. And I applied for an MBA to Stanford. I unfortunately did not get in. So I thought, okay, if I wanted to go learn how to do business, I can just learn by doing that. And this is why I started Vouchery.
You didn't get into business school. You wanted to learn how to do business. So why not just go and open your own business? What an amazing statement. You decided to open Vouchery. And I was wondering, why is this the problem you've decided to solve?
I noticed this problem of inefficiency. And that was the topic I was also very passionate about because I worked in a similar area of building data-driven customer personalization products. So it was the area that I knew well.
My question is more about the drive that led you to solve that problem. Was it more noticing the business gap and the ability to make millions out of it? Or was it more of a passion, a personal problem that you wish to solve?
So I definitely relate to it as a client, because I noticed a lot of inefficiency. I also relate as a consumer. Oftentimes, when I buy clothes or cosmetics online, I often get discounts for my birthday that are actually very boring. You know, you get, let's say, 10% for your birthday, but then in 2 weeks, you get just another 10% because the company has sale. So I noticed how those promotions are not really personalized towards every client. So I just noticed a huge opportunity and a big problem that has to be solved in a large enough market. I have one rule in my life, which is, if not you, then who? And this is why I started working on it.
If not you, then who?
Yeah.
Nice one. You notice a gap in the market, you understand there's a pain, and you are the right person to solve it because of your previous experience. How does Vouchery solve it?
Vouchery is basically a marketing platform that helps companies to automate and personalize e-commerce promotions like coupons, discount, referral, and loyalty programs. So we have a programmable API which timely triggers the most relevant promotion at every step of customer journey. Whether it's an apology voucher when the customer is unhappy, or a special occasion promo when we have Mother's Day or holidays when the customer follows the company.
Your clients are businesses that publish coupons and are looking to reach their client. By using your platform, your API, they can reach a well-targeted audience that will result in better conversion for buying their coupons, right?
In a nutshell, yes. Our clients are not only retail clients. We work with different industry businesses, like for instance, Deutsche Bahn, which is a German railway, who are leveraging the promotions to shape consumer behavior. Which means if you're a train, whenever we know that something breaks or the train is late or the train is full, then we try to incentivize the passengers to either pick a different way of transport or to change their route through incentives towards positive outcomes, which in this case is train occupancy.
This relates to something you said way back in one of the interviews you had, when you stated that every promotion should fit the right stage of the customer life cycle and their level of engagement. And what you just described is you actually have to understand the right timing to go ahead and publish that coupon to create that incentive, to create that conversion.
Yes, exactly. Our newest statement of the company, which we actually came up with just maybe 2 weeks ago with the team, is to reward what matters. So for every company, something else matters, right? We have companies in Africa who are using vouchery as a gift for a doctor visit. Our mission is to help companies to build long relationship, and that's something that is important for us.
So vouchery is an API that publishes the coupons for your clients in order to target the right audience at the right time. On which existing platforms vouchery already works?
Our promotions can be connected to any channel that our customers, so the brands, are using. If they use display marketing, they can create a trigger-based promotions, but the channel doesn't really matter. So we support our customers in delivering the promotions through any channel.
When you think about it, users are being bombarded in every possible channel by advertisements. You need to have some secret sauce, whether it's the algorithms or the methodology or the channel, to rise above that noise. So users will see what you promote. In 2020, what is the best way to achieve and drive engagement from the users and deliver the coupons to?
There are two sides of the story here. I think 2020 is a very peculiar year that a lot of things is happening, a lot of shifting is going on. What we are working on right now is enabling consumers to automate the messages, including coupon promotion in WhatsApp. So we advise our clients to, instead of focusing on the channel, to really work on the message and to add a lot of empathy to their strategy in terms of messaging, in terms of a business strategy, and in terms of the communication with their consumers, their customers. It's also important for us as a company also treat our clients with empathy. So for instance, we allowed a few clients to pause the membership. Our clients are, for instance, shopping malls, which have been closed for some time. So we allow them to pause membership, or even gave a discount in pricing for this hard period for everybody. Just kindness for your customers and understanding of this hard period.
I find it really interesting. I was expecting you to say the obvious ones, you know, like Facebook and Google Ads. And you're working to automate WhatsApp as one of the leading channels for those promotions. Which signals have you seen that made you decide WhatsApp is the next channel to go to?
In our case, now focus is on smaller businesses as well to help them go through the hard periods. What we notice is that many of them are thinking of WhatsApp as the easiest way of contact with their clients. So for instance, when we think of a food delivery, ordering services, I feel like many of the shops or businesses never had contact with their consumers online, but this year they had to switch, right? They had to start thinking differently because of the lockdown in many areas of the world. That forced those businesses towards going online. And the easiest way was definitely WhatsApp, as many customers are using this channel for communicating with friends and family.
Looking into 2021 or even 2022, which channel do you believe is going to be the main one? And do you see any trends predicting a shift, another shift in the main channels?
The Western world moving to WhatsApp will definitely increase. If you think of Southeast Asia and China, WeChat is a very big channel for them, right? Even today, when I was talking with a customer from Australia in the morning, he asked me whether we integrate with WeChat. So I feel like this trend of a direct communication through a very easy platform like WeChat, WhatsApp, all the messengers, that definitely will increase in the following years. That is something that is just starting to pick up.
For the past 4 years, you've been working on Vouchery, and I'd like us to go year by year and try to remember the goals you set, the challenges you had to overcome, and the milestones you've achieved.
Oh, wow. Our first year, when I was focusing on three things. First, to really validate the idea, whether there was enough people that had the problem that I was working on. I tried to research, to talk to as many as possible people, not only in Berlin, but from all over the world, to make sure this is a really a global problem, the global market opportunity. Talk to companies like Amazon as well, or eBay. That was very efficient, and it gave me a lot of information, not only whether they have the problem, but also how to build the product so it could potentially cater to their needs as well. So that was one goal and one milestone I reached. The second one was definitely looking for a team, looking for a co-founder, and specifying the product together. The challenges were to really find the right people to work with.
Looking for that co-founder, you actually achieved that milestone. You found your first co-founder, Kale Morgenstern.
Yes, I have. You know, that was something that I've never had any experience. Although I was hiring people at Rocket Internet for my own team, it's really hard to find the right co-founder. Because what I've learned until now is that at the end of the day, skills don't matter that much as the attitude and really resilience.
Attitude and resilience, so true. But how do you interview? What are you looking for? Because having coffee together doesn't reveal that until you have your first argument, your first fight.
So I would not really even say pick up the first fight, even when the things go wrong. And in a startup, when you build a startup, I would say 95% of the time things go wrong, you know, and you gotta be actually used to it. You get like 99% rejections, right? Answering your question, how do you do that? Well, so my way until now was that I was basically doing a tryout, right? So worked with the person for some time until they really were either in or out. If I was to start again, I would not go this way. I would actually just hire a person for a full-time position before committing or step them up as a co-founder.
Recording 89 episode, I thought I heard everything from working only with friends, going together to hackathons, solving together a problem or a project for several months. These are all answers that I already heard, but yours is the first time I heard someone says, I'm going to hire someone as an FTE, a full-time employee, have them work for me for a period of time before I decide if I will promote them to become a co-founder. That's first, and it sounds really interesting. I'd love for you to share the reasoning behind that decision.
The reason for it is that short periods of time, like for instance, hackathons or even collaborations, you do not really learn how the person performs under pressure and how the person reacts to changing requirements or how really the person reacts when, for instance, a client that you worked a lot for or you are preparing your system for some time, what happens when they actually resign and leave. So there is a lot of those situations that I would never expect to happen that actually happened. And my approach is that, okay, we learned, so we just should not make the mistakes again. But for some people, it feels like a failure. I often saw some people are just not really equipped well to handle a constant failing, which in startups, you basically fail on a daily basis. Nevertheless, you still keep going. You have to be flexible, you have to be creative, and you really have to believe in your success, right? So if a specific thing does not work, doesn't mean that your whole startup doesn't work, right? You just need to fix this thing or change it, whether it's pricing, whether it's business model, whether it's a way that you want to solve the problem, right? Of course, if someone has experience of working with another person and it's a longer experience, either from previous company or from school, of course, it's a different thing, right? Because they know that they will probably invest at the same level into the project.
That concluded beautifully the first year of Vouchery, and we're getting into the second year, 2018. What were the goals you set, the challenges you had to overcome, and the milestones you've achieved?
2018 was really about finding our first customers and launching the products with them. One of our first large clients was actually the German railway, Deutsche Bahn. We also formalized the company to work with them. We built the first version of the product, which was a big success for me personally. The goals was definitely launch the product, which happened. There was a lot of challenges for sure, right? Like, how do you really find the first business customer? It's very hard. Business customers are often very picky, right? They do not only care about the idea that you have, about the technology that you create, but they also care about how many people you have to support them, how many people you have to help them integrate the product, etc. There was a lot of thinking how to overcome this first customer fear, because of course, no business wants to be the first. Everyone wants to have a recommendation that your product is actually stable and reliable, especially that our product touches the consumer shopping funnel. Imagine that if our product breaks, that actually blocks the revenue for our clients. So that was one of the biggest challenges to really gone through.
How many clients did you go and see? How many no did you get before you nailed that first great client?
Oh, like a lot. So I think at the beginning, what was also hard was to really, first of all, find the right client. When you build your first product, call it, instead of MVP, I call it in B2B, it's a minimum sellable product. Because whatever you can sell, that's something you'll launch.
Minimum sellable product, MSP.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It had to be a client that we can really test our solution and the first features that we came up with that would be essential for the client to work with. That was the one requirement, but also the size. In this year, I was also still consulting, and it was fairly hard for me to build a product on the side and also work for a different company. That was definitely something I wanted to stop and focus on Vouchery solely. And that was when we thought getting a fairly large client that could pay for the tool for the months to come and paid for its development. Definitely was a challenge. But to how many customers I talked to, I would say maybe 1,000, showing them the demo. I reached out at the beginning as well, sending emails. I was calling to first clients. I was really testing many strategies, not sure which go-to-market strategy would work. At the end of the day, they paid off, especially when me sharing the knowledge that we have in the team from Rocket Internet, from what I've learned about working with promotions and personalizing the marketing messages to customers. That actually brought us the clients that later purchased the subscription.
You said a couple of interesting things. The first one is you realized you cannot continue consulting and you have to be fully committed in order to launch this product. You have to find that big client and you tried different sales strategies. Have you figured out why some worked and some didn't? And what is the business model of Vouchery?
Working with enterprise companies and small businesses, we have a monthly subscription license that is based mostly on how many coupon redemptions a month company wants to execute. With the smallest plan, subscription plan are starting just from 5,000 coupon redemptions a month. The larger ones, of course, they have a higher enterprise plans and we count in millions, right? So this is the scale of the businesses we work. In terms of the strategies that I tried, direct outreach to marketers and the companies that I discovered had some issues with the coupon management. Surprisingly, that did not really bring much effects.
Why is that? What do you think?
I would say that not having expertise in sales, I've never worked really in sales, made me a little bit of a rookie, you know, in that field. I actually started from something that I did not know completely. Later on, I started from something that I really knew well, and that actually worked out, right? That stand out, my knowledge, my expertise, really sharing it with the clients. So that actually brought them in.
It's really clever what you did. You realize that you're not that good at selling the product as a salesperson, picking up the phone and doing a sales pitch. So you've adapted and you went to those big companies sharing from your experience and expertise, and then they gained trust in you and decided they want to work with you, which translated into a business relationship, converting into a client, right?
Yes. So in the second way, we focused on inbound marketing, which was really to create knowledgeable articles and the content on the internet about the problems that we are solving, how to solve it, how to make the promotions efficient, and really a lot of advice on the internet we were posting. So that brought the clients that really got interested in it, right? That really had this problem already. And that was very, very effective. And it is, to this day, the most effective strategy that we have.
Have you tried another strategy besides the direct and the inbound?
It was mostly sending emails, asking people for feedback, especially at the very beginning, calling, writing on LinkedIn. Keep in mind that when I was starting the company, I had absolutely no marketing budget. So that was also a challenge. How do you create a marketing strategy without any budget? I don't really believe that if you post an ads on Facebook or Google Ads from the very start, that actually validates your problem. I believe that it actually doesn't.
You sent cold emails and reached out to people at LinkedIn. Did it work?
Some got, some didn't. I feel like I would have to spend full time focus on this. That's one. And definitely marketers are nowadays overwhelmed with the pitch emails that they get. It's very easy to land in spam and be perceived as just another vendor or provider of service that just tries to sell something. For sure, if I would spend more time, more testing, then there would be definitely more learning nevertheless, my time as a CEO was also very limited. I rather focused on things that worked.
So before we jump to 2019 and do the same retrospective of setting goals, overcoming challenges, and achieving milestones, I found something that for me as an Israeli was really interesting. In 2018, you visited Tehran, Iran, and you gave a lecture to founders and entrepreneurs.
Yes.
You're not Arab, you're not Muslim, so how did that adventure start?
Friend of a friend asked me to join the conference there as a speaker.
With Vouchery, right?
Yes, two founders that are originally from Iran but moved to Berlin asked for a recommendation of women to speak at their conference about mostly working abroad in either Germany and also with the global clients. Really, the conference was about getting more Iranians to teach them on how to work in a larger global scale. Having expertise at Rocket Internet, even now at Voucher, we have customers like, let's say, Saudi Arabia. It's fairly not an easy country to work with, to do business with. That was the knowledge I was sharing.
As a Jew and an Israeli, if I get in, I will be executed. But getting the chance to visit this country, experience their culture, and get to know the people, that must have been quite an experience. Entering 2019, just before COVID, what were your goals, challenges, and milestones?
2019 was definitely biggest year for us so far. We grew a lot in terms of the revenue. First full year we had launched, we rebuilt the platform based on the early feedback we got from the first version. We made it more stable. We launched new continents as well, especially in markets like US and Southeast Asia, Australia also, Africa. So that was very exciting. The goals was to increase the revenue mostly and focus on the mission, the vision in terms of our product features.
2020 started with COVID already in full impact. And as we know, it affected every company, not to mention startups. Looking at your startup that has to do all with coupons and online marketing, in a way, it feels like it wouldn't affect you as much, even grow your business. Is that right?
The funny situation was that I was actually in the US at the conference ready to fundraise. At the same day when I was boarding my flight, the conference has been cancelled. So I end up going for holidays. No one really was ready to meet in person. So that was definitely a little bit of an inconvenience. At the beginning, there was a lot of unknown and a lot of fears that our clients might also decrease their budgets or just simply go out of business. And we had to really postpone a certain integrations with, for instance, a large hotel chain in the United States and other smaller client onboarding projects. What we see now is that a lot more businesses are moving online, which is a good thing, of course. Also, a lot of businesses are ready to compete for a consumer nowadays. So the competition has definitely increased, forcing companies to innovate on a larger scale, much faster. So we actually see now much more customer requests than before.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When you think about the SMBs, small, medium businesses, their way to communicate and engage clients is mainly based on face-to-face, personal interactions. And now they've lost that. So they will be willing to go online and look for new ways of communication, even just to say, hey, we're still here, we're alive, keep buying, keep purchasing from us.
Yeah, definitely. On top of that, selling vouchers and gift cards is something that helps businesses to sustain themselves during the lockdown. When you sell a gift card now, you basically receive the revenue for the gift card. Nevertheless, the service is performed at the later stage. And that means that gift cards are a pretty good influx of cash for businesses that are in the crisis.
2017, you were still consulting, starting the business. 2018, you've decided that you want to be fully committed in vouchery, stop consulting, so you landed a huge client. 2019, still bootstrap. And then 2020, you decided that you want to go to a conference and find funding, find investors. COVID started, that didn't go as well as you thought. Currently, what's your state of mind? Are you planning on staying bootstrap as a pre-made decision, or in bootstrap as a result of not being able to raise capital?
I had a very good mentor and my ex-colleague from Rocket that was always telling me, focus on your customers. The product and the customers are two things at the very beginning that you should only spend your time on. So that's what I did. From time to time, I used to talk with investors that I really admired from my experience working at Rocket. So I knew a few people and wanted to talk to them, not only in terms of investment, but also asking them for feedback.
The founders of Rocket are investors as well, right?
I've never actually talked to them. It's a different types of investing, and I don't really see them investing much in small ventures or at the early stage. This is why I have not talked to them. Going to US, I just wanted to get to know investors better. So I feel like bringing investor on board is very similar to bringing a co-founder on board. Those people are going to be there for you and with you for the next, I don't know,
hopefully years and years.
Yeah, I feel like every person should really build the relationship with investors even before fundraising. And that was something I was going to do. I do not fundraise full time right now. I tried at the very beginning. I noticed it was much easier for me to bring new customers than actually investors on board. And this is why I decided that instead of focusing 6 months of my time on really fundraising is really full-time job that usually takes around 6 months. So instead of doing that, I rather decided to focus on the customers. And I feel like that was a better decision. We're open for funding in the future when our growth will be justified.
Will you start looking for investment in 2021?
It's hard for me to say. So right now we see the market growing, and this is why my focus still lies on the customers. Once we grow to the moment where I will say, okay, now I can definitely stop focusing on clients because we are at the level where we have a few people on board, I can really delegate most of my responsibilities, then I will actually focus on finding investors. I feel like we don't need immediate cash right now.
Those few investors that you did meet with, what was their feedback?
They either did not see the market large enough, although we built something that is very narrow, which is an API for automating e-commerce promotions. I feel like most investors look at our tool as either loyalty or referral, something that is already in the market that is very competitive. A second thing was definitely very crowded market.
So let's answer that. What's the market size for a product like vouchery?
The way I look at it, we work not only with the companies that are online. For instance, this month, we're starting working with a telecom company from Cambodia, right? Which means for me that the market is huge because we work with a lot of verticals like services, retail market that is global. At the beginning of starting Vouchery, I only envisioned e-commerce businesses. However, working with clients like even money exchange service made me realize how large the market really is.
That's really interesting way to look at it. The second point that investors made was about the red ocean being in a crowded scene. Who are your competitors?
So there are few tools on the market that already existed before me starting Vouchery. One of them is oldest coupon provider from US, which is called Valasis. Those are the ones that work with Tesco or any large supermarkets. Another ones are loyalty systems and referral marketing systems as well. And there are a few who just started on the moment that we have. Before Vouchery, companies were developing homegrown infrastructure for managing coupons and creating and generating the promotions. In the past, you could do that. The marketing was not so advanced in terms of how data-driven it is. But now, marketing became a completely new type of technology. And also, consumers expect much more automated and personalized offers. This is why homegrown solutions for voucher management and coupon management are not enough anymore. And this is how Vouchery is different. So we are trying to leverage artificial intelligence and machine learning, looking at the patterns, which coupons are most favorite by customers, and really propose them as such. So that's something that's never been done in the market.
You previously mentioned that you're doing business in Cambodia, and actually Vouchery is currently in four continents: Australia, South Asia, Europe, and US. How do you grow your business globally and reach out to these different countries and make impact?
One person actually told me important thing. At the beginning, the good practice is a small market. But when you think about small markets, you usually think of a market that is, let's say, local, that is close to you. He actually made me realize that a small market does not mean geographic area. It actually means a small feature that should solve the problem in a small market, let's say a specific industry. And we started writing about it in English. That actually made customers from different areas to just reach out to us and say, hey, I also have this problem. Could you help me solve it?
I feel there's a good insight here because everyone is writing on Medium and Facebook and LinkedIn and other social networks and blogs and newspapers, not necessarily having a success like you did. So what's the magic? What do you do differently than others?
We post a lot of articles on third-party blogs and sharing platforms, so not only LinkedIn, Medium, but also, let's say, growth hackers, marketing blogs, for instance. It's not marketing blogs that work best for us, but the channel that has definitely grew a lot was Quora. We post a lot of answers to customers' questions on Quora.
That's another first. We didn't have Quora as a marketing tool yet. Do you drop your product name casually in the answer, or you make it the solution for the user problem?
Drop it casually. So, of course, we need to introduce ourselves and say, hey, I know this topic because I built this and this and this. We never try to be very salesy, just truly want to help those people to find a solution to their problem. And whether it's our product or our competitor's product or whether they can build it themselves, it doesn't really matter. So a really honest approach of wanting to help people who are asking for a solution on Quora brought us the highest amount of clicks.
Amazing.
Another thing that also helps us a lot, which was surprising for me, was Instagram. We also got a lot of visits from Instagram, from running Instagram page of Vouchery. And that actually something I previously thought would only work for consumer product.
What kind of images or videos or posts works for you in Instagram?
So it's definitely a lot of short advice that we put on the Instagram visuals, but also sometimes even motivational quotes that align with the vision of our company, right? So about learning, about pushing forward, about conquering obstacles. We feel like that's also something that we want to talk about. So we want to be a partner for our clients that really helps them to perform their job better and helps them to succeed in their job. And this is why we leverage Instagram not only as a knowledge sharing, but also really trying to push them forward as human beings.
Are you using Twitter as well?
Yeah, Twitter is also a good channel for us. Nevertheless, it does not stand out. The way we're looking at channels is that our target persona is either a senior marketer in the company, product owner or product manager, or product leader. Looking at those positions, we are always trying to measure the age group of each channel, right? Whether really match with our target group. Right now, it's around 30 to 40 years old.
We mentioned working with all those continents and all those countries, and I was wondering how business differ. Each continent and each country has its own culture, and you have to adapt to their customs and maybe their different ways of doing business, of interaction. What did you learn about that?
Definitely, the way of doing business in Southeast Asia is much different than Europe or US, for instance. But also, even you doing business in US is also much different than in Europe.
Can you share some examples?
Yeah. So, for instance, once I went to Thailand to train people how to use the tool, everybody said they understood how the product worked. And, you know, no one ever asked any question. But when I came back, I noticed that no one uses the product, you know, so I was like, OK, so what's wrong? Why did those people like don't use it? And I tried to research from here. What I discovered was that there were questions. No one really wanted to publicly admit that they did not understand something. That's something that you don't do in the culture, to really raise your hand and say, I don't understand. That's not looked at very well by other peers or even a boss. It was new to me to learn a different way of explaining the product. Even sometimes how people communicate, how people use English. Specific countries are very much direct in their communication. And for some people, might that even be a little bit rude? We also had an employee in Germany. She was raised in very conservative German family. And the way she also talked to the clients that we have in the United States was very formal, which for them, for a startup people, California, was also something that they were not used to. So they also found it a little bit rude or over the top because it was very formal. Nevertheless, I feel the more global we go, the more we learn that at the end of the day, you know, people have the same goals. People are really the same all over the world. They have the same needs. Young people, especially the new generation working in startups everywhere in the world, they are more similar than people ever been. So that's definitely an interesting shift.
Goals, challenges, and milestones. We went through 2017 to 2020, and it's only appropriate to ask you about 2021. What are your goals and which milestones do you wish to achieve?
Definitely increasing revenue is one of the biggest goals. Even this year, we plan to increase revenue 100%. also some smaller goal, like hiring, filling particular position, growing the team, hiring full-time support people, hiring salespeople, as well as making sure we are becoming more data-driven. We have some projects planned for Q4 of 2021. So definitely those projects in Berlin, I would love them to launch in 2022. We also have timeline for launching a new API, make sure that our product is even easier for the customers to use and integrate as well. That's definitely going to be interesting year, you know, to see what are the shifts that are happening in the world after the crisis and after we are done with the pandemic.
It has been interesting and it's still going to be interesting for the next 12 to 18 months, I believe. You said that you wanted to meet with some investors that you idolize and you follow and you truly admire. Pick one investor that you believe people should know about and get advice from and why.
I personally admire very much Christoph Jans from Point Nine Capital. I feel like he is a person that is the one of the most knowledgeable people in SaaS industry, invested in Zendesk, Typeform, companies like Chartmogul. All those companies, what I like is that they have amazing products. They also have very humble founders on board. So that's something definitely I admire. And I feel like the Point Nine Capital is definitely one of the most humble VC firm I've ever experienced. I recommend definitely everyone to ask them for advice, and they actually always reply and they tell you straightforward. So that's great.
What was the most impactful, inspiring, emotional, exciting moment so far with Vouchery?
You know, when you get so many rejections, you're used to them, right? But then when you get a win, it's just amazing. It always gives you a lot of satisfaction. We've been a finalist of Black Box Connect program that happened in San Francisco and was sponsored by Google Entrepreneurs. Being there was an amazing moment. It was amazing. 3 weeks spending in San Francisco with fellow founders and Google employees and learning from them. That was one. Landing our first client, Deutsche Bahn. But at the end of the day, what makes me most satisfied is when I hear how happy our current clients are with the product, even when I don't ask. When they just say in the email, hey, your product is really great. You have something really cool out there. Even recently, when a person was changing his job, was leaving the company, our client, and wrote us amazing email, how great our product is. Hearing that, I really almost cried, you know, because that's really something that keeps us going, keeps you pushing forward, keeps you just working and waking up on the morning every day.
The way we like to end each and every episode is with a paid forward, asking you to recommend another female founder to be hosted on the show, share her experience and journey with her own startup.
Paulina Valkoviak from Cooks.io. It's a marketing software for analyzing your website and user experience.
So Evie, I'd like to thank you for being on the show, sharing from your experience, hoping that 2020 will end up with a good outcome and 2021, 2022 will be awesome years for you.
Thanks a lot for this opportunity.
And thank you all for joining us in another episode of A Startup is Yacht, a podcast about female founders who dream and deliver. You can find more episodes on our website or favorite podcast app. Until next time, yalla bye.
Shut up and sit down.